Welcome, sports fans, to the first Wolfpack edition of the Windmill Sports Show. You know, Pack's got one game under their belt, basketball team. Went to the game, check out the Pack. We're talking a little bit about that. I'm your host, Kenny B, here with Josh Nagel from Sportsline. Josh, what's going on?
Ken, not too much. Just getting into some Friday night. NBA's all over the place, also a couple college football games. So weekend action's already underway.
John the Hawk Stevens.
Yo.
I'm writing down all of my football bets right now.
Nice.
Trying to figure get all this up. So
you got everything squared away?
Nah, getting there. Wolfpack coming off a loss, game one at home versus. Utah. Thank you. Yeah, and we talked about this last week. You know, we all kind of anticipated what the line was going to come. Ironically, I said it was going to come 5.5, or did I say 6?
You said 6.
I said 6, and you guys said 5.5.
Yes.
But we were all thinking that it was going to be Utah favored by 5.
I was not thinking that.
Oh, I was thinking.
I
was thinking the other way. Josh, when you picked your favorite in the Nevada Utah game, were you saying Nevada was going to be favored, or were you saying Utah?
Right. When you asked the question, I was under the assumption that Nevada would be favored.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Then I nailed it, and you guys didn't.
Yeah,
nail it.
You were all over it.
Because I actually made the game minus 5.5. It opened at 6, immediately went to 5.5. And with that being said, I had a pretty chunky bet on Utah in that game. I just thought that, you know, with the size advantage and all of the uncertainty in the game, I thought Nevada would come out. I thought Nevada would win a close game. And you know, and you kind of look at the way the game transpired. Nevada loses by 5. I had the game at 5.5,
yeah,
which I was right there. But you know, the fact that we lost Jalen Harris was a big deal. With eight minutes gone in the first half, right around that area.
Yep.
You know, everybody was terrified that Jalen was going to be down for the season. He came back out in a walking boot. But you know, apparently, from what I've seen is that there was no break or anything. He was going to go in for a second MRI to see if there's any ligament damage or anything of that nature, which I have not heard the outcome of that.
Nothing's been announced as of yet, but it's the best case scenario for what had happened. And I stayed home, didn't go to the game with you guys, and I saw it happen. I didn't see exactly what it took place. I saw him kind of keeled over, something was wrong. I was like, oh, I hope that's nothing serious. And then you text me and said, hey, Jalen's in the boot, what's up? And the announcers hadn't said anything at that point. So, but best case scenario, you don't need to rush him back at this point. It'd be nice to see Jalen Harris on the floor. You know, he's supposed to be the guy at this point. He's supposed to be the guy who's doing all the scoring. But then you got Mr. Drew stepping up and having a game for the ages right there, just because he's the first player this century to go 30 points, 8 assists, 6 rebounds, and hit 5 three-pointers. The first D1 player this century to do that.
Well, and the key, did you say no turnovers?
And no turnovers.
That was the key.
That was the add. That was the add-on to it.
Yeah.
Because I saw that stat and then said, oh, by the way, he had 0 turnovers. For a point guard, that's pretty hard to do.
Absolutely. You know, and it was funny. It wasn't funny. You know, it was great to see.
And play great defense.
It was exactly. It was great to see his stroke. His stroke has improved.
It totally has.
I know that when 2 years ago when he was playing, he kind of had a sideways stroke. You know, if you were sitting behind.
Well, his freshman year,
it looked like it came off the side of his hand, kind of. But I tell you what, man, his stroke looks good. Lindsey looks good. I would have to think that he's probably pretty sore right now, though.
I would imagine.
You know, after not being in any kind of basketball competition for a couple of years and playing the amount of time that he did in that game. And, you know, and the effort. I mean, Lindsey, he balled up.
Yeah, he's always been our guy. He's always been one of our favorite players out there, and he's such a smart player, which, you know, you would think you'd be with the bloodlines that he has. Such a smart player, so long on defense, and he always seems to make the right decision. And he didn't go out there to score. They left him open, and he just hit it.
They challenged him.
Yeah, and he stepped up, and when they had to have it, I mean, he almost single-handedly kept him in the game. On both ends of the floor. It was something to see. And you know, Coach Alford said that he liked the effort from them. They had no quit. They played with a lot of tenacity.
I love
Utah
what I
team.
Saw.
I'll tell you what. Going forward, they're picked ninth in the Pac-12. That's a team to bet on.
Yeah, they impress me.
They are Utah is long and strong.
Yep, and they got that one big guard that could just absolutely stroke it. Absolutely stroke it. You know, Robbie Robinson, he finished with a couple of points. You know, like we talked about, Lindsey Drew, he had 30 points. Jazz got going a little bit late, but he ended up 6-for-16 from the field and had 16 points. So so Jazz and Lindsey were the only two players in double figures. Zuzwal ended up with 9 points.
Yeah, you know? I think that's a key right there is Nisre. And I like Zane too. Zane, it looks like he can play. He got a little foul trouble, but he can play. He can stroke it.
He can. He hit that 1-3 late, which I thought was a fantastic shot. I mean, you could tell how
they set him up for it again, and he was a little off.
I think he's gonna be
a player. I liked what I saw the other night. That Utah team's no joke, and I took Utah too. Once it got closer to it, I was thinking about it, and there's just so many unknowns. There's unknowns with Utah as well. That's a young team. They're littered with sophomores and freshmen, but their guys stepped up. That's a quality Pac-12 team. I think they're going to be in the middle of the pack, Josh. What do you think about Utah?
Yeah, they're always pretty well coached, and it's kind of funny. They're one of those schools we talk about, like similar to the football team. They can always be counted on. They always play sort of the same way, and they were anticipated, like you mentioned, a high roster turnover, a younger team. What do you think about Utah? And they just sort of keep producing, and they at this point got a solid system going with their coach. Yeah, talk about Nevada. We'll see how all the role players end up coming along and whatnot. But one thing we knew months ago was between Jazz Johnson and Lindsey Drew, you can't go wrong with an experienced backcourt in college basketball will take you somewhere.
Yeah, no doubt.
We thought in terms
it.
Of on the on-court assets that Coach Alford had to inherit when he came in, that was going to be the biggest prize, that he had to step in with some real senior leadership there.
Yep.
Experienced guys, backcourt veterans are going to be huge. I was just glad to see that they were the ones who stepped up, and everyone else, we all know there's been some personnel issues on the rest of the roster, and hopefully end up with a pretty solidified starting five going forward. But I saw Ken just the other day here at the casino just walking in, and we talked to him and said, more or less, it was a fun team to watch. We think anticipate a pretty exciting season because it looks like
we are young, Josh.
Some talent out there, and we just expect to get better.
Yeah, and I think K.J. Himes had some good moments. You know, that's his first collegiate start, one of the rare redshirt freshmen of that caliber, at least. You know, he didn't have really a spot last year. Musk couldn't even get a five-star McDonald's All-American in the rotation, let alone K.J. Himes last year.
Yeah.
So, they're going to need him. They're going to need that size down low. You know, John Carlos had some moments. He had some good defensive moments, too. It's an exciting team. It's a lot different from last year, different level of excitement because, we're thinking – this is a top 10 team.
Last year, John, the pressure was, my God, we can't lose.
That's exactly it. So you watch every game like it's the NCAA championship.
You do.
Now you can relax a little bit and see this team developing.
And
this
I think we will.
This is the way Coach Alford has it designed.
Yep.
You want to play your best ball going into January when conference play starts. And I took it away. I took away the Wolfpack as a bright future there, depending on Jalen Harris's health, of course. Because he's the X factor. He's the guy that was going to compete for the Mountain West Player of the Year honors. He's a legitimate scorer. He scored at La Tech. He has the ability to – when you run the three-guard, you have the whole – it's not just Jazz and Lindsey. You add him to the backcourt, and it's just – that's a problem. When he gets off, if he can get off like they say he can, that's a problem for people.
Yeah. I'm going to get back to the game. Yeah, Andy Juros, he played Somerset today, the guy that always goes, stay out of the sand. He said it was a tough course. He got humbled. Yeah, there's more sand at Somerset than there is at a beach. Stay out of the sand.
Yeah.
I mean, you hit two balls in
that
the sand
one hole,
and
man.
have trouble getting out, yeah, you're going to blow a scorecard.
And there's usually snakes in there.
And there's usually snakes. So with that being said, John, I absolutely agree. You know, Mark Shannon, who's actually a college basketball official, was texting me through the game, and he was saying it's really refreshing to see a coach call a timeout in the first half, and actually coach the kids a little bit. And I think I love what we have in this program. I love the direction this program's going. If we would have taken this loss last year, I would have been so upset. But I really came back. I really left the game with a breath of fresh air. I really was happy with what I seen. You know, if Parrish would have been there, we'd win the game. If Jalen Harris would have been there, we'd have won the game.
Let's not get into Jordan Brown.
Let's not get into Jordan Brown, yeah. But, but the one thing Harris can do is he's a slasher, too, from the guard position. So when he gets to the lane, he's going to be able to kick the ball out to some wide-open people, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a lot of, they said that their whole game plan was to slash to the basket and kick the ball out. Well, when Jalen went down, that kind that kind of hampered a little bit. That's the reason late in the game you kept seeing Jazz trying to go in there, but he was open.
And so that was the thing. He's
a beast. Love the heart and the motor.
I do too, but it was
you guys.
It was a road to nowhere. I mean, there's 2 7-footers for Utah at times, and for Jazz to go to the lane and really not have any option once he gets down there.
Yep.
When you pick up your dribble, you're kind of stuck there. Yep. But getting back to Coach Alford, from an X's and O's standpoint, it's night and day with him and Musselman. I've always thought that.
I agree with that.
And I said that at the time. You know, he may not be the recruiter, but obviously Alford's recruited everywhere he's been as well. They're going to go after a different type of player, I believe. It won't be quite as flashy. The splash 5-star recruits, I don't think, are coming again. Not that he did.
Not that
he did anything with them, Coach Musk, that is. But I was exactly what Mark Shannon said. I was excited over a timeout. That's funny that he says that, because I was like, okay, let's go. Reset. Let's start over. Let's do this again.
But let's talk about five-star recruit, guys. If you're a 5-star recruit under the Musselman philosophy, why would you come to Nevada? Because you're coming as a freshman, and if he would have continued his tenure here, he's going after all these transfers. So it's almost like you're not going to be able to play. So why would you do that? I think we have more of a chance with success to get young 5-star recruits now, because they know that they're going to be going up against kids that aren't 5th-year seniors, 4th-year seniors, and I think they have a better chance of breaking the lineup.
But
Jordan Brown, case in point.
But the flip side to that is, if you are a true 5-star recruit, your mindset is you're one and done.
Yeah.
So
why would
that
you?
Would have been a perfect place for him to come. I honestly think, I can't get in Jordan Brown's head, but I thought okay, this is a team coming off of Sweet 16. Everybody's back. Top 10 caliber team. They're going to be here for 1 year. I'm going to be here for 1 year. I'm going to be a major part of this. And he just wasn't, and it drives me insane.
I agree.
Don't know why.
I'm still disappointed that he left. I still don't.
I am too, but I wish him all the luck. I hope he tears it up at Arizona has a long NBA career.
I absolutely agree with that, John. I just don't. But it goes back to what you said. I just don't. You said you couldn't get into his head, and I have the same thinking process or thought process here. Is that I just don't. If he's a one and done, then what? He has to go. He's not going to take the court basically for 2 years. I mean, he got minimal playing time last year. Out this year. Now he's 3 years and done. I just don't understand the reasoning for him leaving. I really think that he could have came in.
It's a glaring weakness from a Nevada fan standpoint. Not having that guy, he would have been absolutely perfect for this. What they're running right now.
What's funny is we've talked about that before, and it is a puzzling decision. But as you saw in the game the other night, Nevada really could have used like a go-to guy. It's clear that as a main component, he could have been the star of this team, and who knows
what. It's a top 20 team with Jordan Brown.
To your point about 5-star recruits,
if Lindsey's doing this
like that, Ken, I'm not sure. I think Musselman, the whole transfer thing, that was temporary anyway. He did it because he had to. He wanted to compete. That's what you do.
Yep.
You take on all the second chance guys, junior college transfers, whatever. And it was working. But I think he wanted to work in a combination of that. Okay, now we're going to get ground level. Now that we've made a Sweet 16, top players just want to come here. We'll start with them as true freshmen. Like you mentioned, if they were really proficient, maybe a couple years and then off to the NBA. But I think he kind of wanted to build like that. With a team like this, I mean, it is just a grassroots thing. I agree. What is interesting compared to last year's expectations, coming off Sweet 16, suddenly, let's face it, they were picked to go to the Final Four.
Yep.
Everyone's picking them. The sports books are taking all these bets on them to win it all. And it was just funny, from the opening tip, every game, capacity, which some of that environment was great, but there was just this pressure. Like, now we've got to live up to be into this Final Four team.
We felt that it was palpable.
Exactly. And don't get me wrong, it was still the end of the season. It was still majorly disappointing just the way the team seemed
sure
to.
Sure was.
Team chemistry seemed to fall apart and things like that. But I like watching this because, again, it's far from a bad team, but it's rebuilding. It's a grassroots thing and probably will get much more improved as the season goes on. It should just be a fun team to watch, and I'm just curious to see Steve Alford's complete impact impression in his first year.
If during the David Carter era, not to disparage David Carter, he's great dude by all indications, and put in a rough spot following Coach Fox and Coach Johnson. If you told me we had a chance at Steve Alford at that time after Eric Musselman, I mean, it's great times for Nevada basketball right now. It's
a
destination.
I absolutely agree.
It's in such great hands right now that a loss like that was not discouraging to me, at least, at all, I thought. The future is really bright, and I'm excited to see where they go from here. And the fact that Lindsey Drew did what he did, and I think that he has the capability. He's not going to score 30 points a night. We know that.
No, but we know he can control a game now.
Yeah. I mean, we knew he could always control a game, Now,
as the focal point.
Exactly. Now, being the guy, being the scorer, I don't know. He's not really asked to do that.
But you know what, Joe? What about in the terms of that? Well, I think he could, but Jazz Johnson, I think, is more of a candidate.
Yeah.
Because remember toward the end of last year where it seemed like we had a couple of those flat games and no one really scored, he stepped up, whatever, had like 27, yeah. Was at Air Force, Colorado State, where Jazz Johnson had a few games, I think, were close to 30 points. But one thing you saw, despite his kind of reputation as a set shooter or whatever, the guy, he can create.
He can.
And like, and now he's never been asked to before in terms of that, you know, scoring type of liability. But I think if you need him to, he's not afraid, he can get in the lane. So I think just the scoring versatility is something we'll see out of him.
And they kind of, Lindsey and Jazz, look like they kind of flipped the script as well, where Jazz was running the one and Lindsey's playing off guard there, and that was an interesting setup as well. So having combo guards like that interchangeable when you get Jalen Harris back, that's going to be an issue for anybody that tries to defend the Wolfpack. Now the big guys got to be big guys. You don't need 20 and 10 from somebody. You just need quality minutes. You need to play defense. You need to rebound. That's all you got to do. Let the guards get there. Let the guards eat. You rebound, play defense.
All right, with that being said, Nevada, what time does Nevada play tomorrow?
I believe 7.
7 o'clock. Marymount. Loyola Marymount coming to town. The number is out for tomorrow. Do you guys know what it is?
I do not.
Okay, so this is – I have no idea if Nick and these guys know if Jay and Harris is playing or not. I've seen nothing. You know, unfortunately, I wish I had that information for the listeners, but I don't know if he's playing or not. So Nevada plays tomorrow, game two, against Loyola Marymount. And Loyola Marymount is 1-0 this year. They played a team called
22-win team last year. Well, they lost their top two scorers.
Yeah, they were much improved. Yeah.
They played West Cliff.
Oh, not East Cliff?
No, they won 105-62. And as we know, Loyola is a team that wants to press the ball or run the ball a little bit, get up and down the court.
Are they still this way?
I think they scored 105. Yeah, anyways.
Well, last year they were a real half-court team, honestly. They were real defensive-oriented.
I mean, you hear Loyola. I understand what you're saying. You hear Loyola Marymount, you think Bo Kimble.
Days of yore of 30 years ago.
And God bless his soul and gathers.
So with that being said, Pack at home tomorrow night. What do you guys make the line?
7 Pack.
I'm no opinion.
No, I'm asking your opinion of what you think the line
will be. Well, I don't know Loyola Marymount well enough. So I'd say, yeah, about the same, 6.
Pack's laying 9.5.
All right.
Pack laying 9.5 tomorrow.
Wrong again.
All right.
So
hey, I mean, that's
I would have been about in your guys' ballpark right there. And Loyola's not very big. I think their biggest guy is 6'7". Don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
I've read so much today about these games that I think that they're not considered a really, really big team. So with that being said, 7-ish game tomorrow. I'm not sure what time. Pack tips off game 2 versus Loyola. Pack women win 2, game 1.
Nice.
That's right.
Yeah, they beat St. Mary's.
Yeah, beat St. Mary's. All right. That being said, let's head off to our first commercial break. When we come back, we'll jump into the NFL football slate. Windmill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the Windmill Sports Show. Talk the first segment about Wolfpack basketball. Wolfpack plays Loyola Marymount tomorrow, laying 9.5 points. Another home game. Don't forget, they also play Tuesday. They play Texas Arlington, so they have a 4-game home. And then next Saturday, USC, Josh. USC.
That's
a
good one. Hey, can I tell you a little story about
Loyola Marymount. Josh, you got to move on.
Loyola Marymount's head coach, Mike Dunlap. The other guy's a former NBA coach. The guy's actually a very revered coach. I'll tell you the little story about him. He's actually got a reputation as one of the best teachers in the game. Many years ago, he was at Division II, a place called Metro State, which is in Denver. He used to win the Division II championship like every year. I knew some coaches in the Bay Area where I said this guy was like a coaching clinic guru. They wanted to go around for all of his different philosophies or whatever. I saw a couple clinics this guy put on. I was like, oh, cool. But do you guys remember a few years ago, there's all these Division I jobs. He was interviewed for Colorado State. Regionally, he could have had just any job he wanted. But he used to say that he just liked what he was doing and he was just going to stay there. But a few years ago, he got an NBA job. And I want to say no one had ever heard of him on the larger scale. Because like, oh, who is this guy? Mike Dunlap. I want to say, who was it, the Grizzlies or the
– I'm not sure.
He was in the NBA in one of the poorer teams for like a couple of years. But it was funny. I remember when he got hired, though, by and large, the national media was like, who is this guy? Well, I was already aware. Like, this guy's a very, reputable coach in the industry. So despite the fact that he was a D2 program, everyone else, nobody cared. But he got an NBA job. And I want to look that up, too. I want to say it's Grizzlies or somebody bad or Hornets. And he only lasted a couple of years. He was just sort of a holding pattern guy until cheap by NBA standards, and they eventually fired him. But he's like, well, now you know, what was he going to do? He's going to go back to college. Loyola Marymount ended up with him, and that's why they've improved so much, because they were really terrible when they hired him. But he's just a great tactician of the game. So despite what you may or may not know tomorrow, Mike Dunlap, the coach of the other teams, extremely accomplished guy. And I remember fading them a couple times last year, blew up because they were just running half-court sets with not the greatest players, but just great execution, and he really does have them turned around.
So take the 9.5 is the moral of the story.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, gotcha. All right, cool.
I would only take the points tomorrow. I think Back wins a close game. I mean, I think that you know the one thing that I have to say that
well,
I know
it's Charlotte,
the game
Hornets
is,
one year
Hornets
is the Pack does get in foul trouble, and then we do have a small bench. We only had 9 players, and when Jalen went down, we only had 8 players. So with that being said, you know,
we had 7 for the last 3 years.
Yeah, but 7 of 2 guys are starting in the NBA right now, or not starting, but playing in the
Speaking
NBA.
Speaking of which, nobody saw Cody Martin's dunk posterization of some idiot Celtic last night. It was fantastic. You see that?
I did.
You haven't seen that? Oh, my goodness, Josh. The internet, it's all over the internet.
I mean, by the way, it's Jordan Caroline. It's just a G League
for the time being.
He's right now.
He's working on his game.
And it's early yet. We're 2 weeks into their career, but I always thought Cody was going to be the guy. If one of them was going to take that step forward, and just because Cody, I mean, he's such a defender. You can run the point. He showed that athleticism last night. Had a great, great dunk, and he's someone that I think is going to stick in this league for a long time.
And as the Pack lineage goes, remind you of Vermont Sessions in terms of being the best pro prospect out of a guy dynasty type team.
Or JaVale McGill.
Yeah, well, JaVale. See, with JaVale,
no one ever counts him for some reason. He gets no respect.
But JaVale had it all, you know, basically, except for a head on his shoulders from you know all indications. But you know when
he's still hanging around
when you're as athletic as he is. And as big as he is, he's gonna have a spot in that league. But I think Cody Martin has a chance. So does Caleb, I guess. But
remember, he was actually not a small part of the Warriors championship teams for a couple years.
No doubt about it. That's the perfect role for him, and he's got a similar role right now with the Lakers.
All right. The one parting shot. The coach for Charlotte said that this Cody Martin kid's making a case for him to put him in the lineup, and he's not even scoring. They said he does everything. He rebounds. Yeah. He defends. He assists. He does everything.
That's exactly my point.
His IQ is off the chart. And he goes, this kid, you know, he goes, he's making a great case for us not to be able to keep him out of it. Yeah. But he's not filling up the stat sheet with points. But he says he does everything else.
I want to see that, kid. I want to see how he progresses because, as you mentioned, early in the season, I was just checking the box scores. He can't obviously get those games on TV unless they're somehow on ESPN or whatever. But I was checking the box score, see if he's playing, and he just barely notched the scorebook. Because we're like, oh, yeah, 3 minutes, no points, no rebounds. I'm like, okay, they're putting the guy in for like 30 seconds before the quarter ends or something. And I just kept waiting, you know, after just checking, you know, the ESPN app or whatever, like seeing that it didn't really seem like he was playing at all, but it appears he's already getting a larger role.
To give Coach Musk great credit.
Oh, yeah.
Every one in America was trying to get Caleb Martin.
Yes.
Everybody was trying to, and the coaches across the country were looking at Cody, how Coach Musk put it,
as a tag along.
The tax.
Right. Like
they said
package
he was the
deal.
Tax
the package deal that
for
you
the
had
package.
To accept.
Yep. And he goes, he went and he recruited Cody.
He knew
what was
That's
going
brilliant.
On. It was absolutely brilliant. Oh yeah, Caleb, you can come too. But yeah, we're going after Cody and Coach Musk, give him all the credit in the world for that because he nailed it. And Cody, you can tell Cody just has that IQ. Cody can do it all on the floor.
And Caleb's on the active.
We have to get to the ball. We have to get the football. But
do we? I mean,
and John,
talk about the Bears.
And one thing that I'll say to you about what you said all along that Cody was going to make the better pro, John. You did say.
I thought so. I just thought so. Just for all everything that you said, without even having to score, which I still think he can.
All right. With this being said, before we get to football, one thing that we can't let our listeners forget about, one of our biggest honey holes last year was betting the Pack in the second half.
Yeah.
Pack and over, second half. Arkansas's played one game this year, one game. They played Rice. They beat them 91-43.
Uh-huh.
In the second half, the Pack outscored Rice 52-24.
There you go.
So they were
carryover.
Yeah, so 24-34, 44. They outscored them by 29 in the second half. Don't sleep on this stat. Follow it.
Yeah.
Muss makes adjustments, and he wants to bury teams in the second half. Don't forget about Musselman's philosophy and Pack.
Would you call him Ed Musselman's?
Yeah, Musselman's? No. I'll call. Don't get me started on all the things that I can call Musselman. So let's not.
Listen.
Let's move on.
I hope you call him SEC champion.
All right, Wolfpack football tomorrow night, San Diego State, real quick. Wolfpack getting 17. Listen, I was looking at this game. I said we're going to NFL. We might as well talk about this.
You just said football. You didn't specify
Which brand of football. Let me get my stats here real quick. So real quick, what are you guys' preliminary thoughts of the game tomorrow? San Diego State.
They're laying 17 and the total's 40, Josh?
Yes. Right, 41, yeah.
41 now? Oh, it's gone up a little bit.
Well, I think that's about right.
I think this is like a 24 to 3, 27 to 10 type game is what I really think it's going to be. Unfortunately,
yeah,
10
could be. Well, you're optimistic there, John. I know. We'll hit double figures in a road.
Coach Norvell is taking over the play calling duties.
Okay. The second half he called real close to the best last week. So real quick, this is what San Diego State 40 Pac's lane 17, or excuse me, San Diego State's lane 17, and everybody just is real quick, and I always too just say, "Oh, there's no way." That's we give me San Diego State this year, this is what they scored. 20, 27, 26, 24, 17, 31, 23, and 6. That's what they've scored this year.
Yeah, like,
so do not discredit the fact that 17 points, if we get 10 points, if we get 10 points, they've got to get to 27 points, which they've only eclipsed one time this year.
It's kind of my thought when the Bills of a couple weeks ago were laying 17 to the Dolphins was this exact thought. Can the Bills even score enough to cover that? And they didn't.
San Diego State is long known for their plotting. They're plotting even slower this year. Total snail pace.
The Pac's defense.
They are really.
I agree.
I think the Pac plays pretty good defense. I really do.
Yeah, San Diego State's tough to watch.
Well,
you know what? So is Nevada. I mean, I'm saying I'm never touching Nevada there.
And NFL.
Unless they prove to me once that they can cover in a road game.
I'm betting it over.
Not a chance. I just won't.
I'm just going to bet it over.
NFL totals in these games. San Diego State's totals for this year, 44, 45. 37.
They're the ones who beat Weber State 6-0, right?
Yes. Yes.
Game 1, 48, 52, 51, 44, and 36. So with that being said, John, I mean, you look at this and you go, really, what's going on? All right, NFL football. Kansas City, the return of Patrick Mahomes tomorrow, going on the road to play the Titans. Nick didn't have a number on the card. It said TBD. But he actually finally hung the line. It looks like Kansas City's going to go on the road, lay 6.5 with a total of 49. Mahomes is going to get the start, but you kind of got to question his mobility. You know, if he stays,
I don't think you do.
Huh?
I really don't think you do.
That's just what I've been reading. That's what.
But I know exactly, and that's what they're going to put out there. And of course, you're going to want to play that close to the vets as well. But I think if he was anything less than 100%, I don't think he'd be out there because I don't think there's a reason for him to be out there. I think that you have to attack this as he's going to be 100%, and this is why I like the Chiefs here. Even though Ryan Tannehill's playing pretty well for the Titans right now.
Yeah, he's not doing bad at all. It's curious whether Marcus Mariota just then becomes
kind of like 71
trade piece in the offseason or whatnot. But yeah, that's a tough one because, like you said, it's been established he's going to play, and the line immediately went up to 6. It's like, you know what? Yeah, the offense, of course, is going to be improved, but this is sort of the situation where the Titans can take a stand a little bit. As a home underdog, they tend to perform pretty well. So, to me, it's just a pass. Too many points to lay with the Chiefs, even though they're kind of getting back on track. I couldn't do it.
I'm with you guys. I would probably only play this game. I probably only play it under, to be
it's
honest.
It's definitely a teaser play for
you. Yeah, it's a teaser play. You getting the Chiefs just to win?
Yep.
All right. I lost my. I've been looking at this because we just got.
You got a lot of stuff going on here,
Jess,
Ken. I'm
Jess
not gonna
lie. Got my the Comos just text me about the Alabama LSU game. We got to talk about that too. Yeah. Browns at home laying 2.5 on the card, went up to 3. Total is 40. Playing the Bills. Really?
Well, here's the thing.
Really?
You can talk about Alabama LSU, but we have to talk about Bills and Browns.
Bills and Browns.
I know.
Really?
No, I
Bills
got you.
Bills and Browns. Really, really, the Browns laying points? I mean, come on, Cleveland. I mean,
does that
two and six?
Does that not tell you something?
Yeah, Buffalo 6-2, 6-2, tied for the second best record in the AFC.
Against a 2-16, and the 2-6 team's a favorite. The price dictates
what makes
the winner.
Yeah, I mean, you look at
give me the Browns.
Cleveland, number 19th ranked offense in the NFL.
They still have the ability to come out and hammer somebody.
They do.
They beat the holy hell out
the Bills
out of the Baltimore Ravens.
And the Bills don't.
Not to hammer somebody, they don't. The Bills are hammered.
The defense, they can.
The last team the Bills hammered was the Raiders 51-3 in the 1990 AFC Championship.
I got no interest in – I got zero interest, John, and zero interest laying points
right.
with Cleveland. Zero.
Me and you in this – we'll have a bet between ourselves. I'll take the Browns.
At 3?
Is that what it is on the card?
No, it's up to 3.
Well, no, we're doing it at 2.5.
No.
Yeah, we're going to do it on the card.
No action. I'm not letting the line move – like Vaccaro used to say, hit the line, let him bet into it, and we'll see where it goes. Okay, the line's been bet into.
Yeah.
It's three. That's my number. If you want – three's just a push on a win. Why not?
No, I want 2.5.
No action. Josh?
Yeah, this is a tough one because, like I said, I feel like I could be jumping into the sucker side with the better winning team getting the points, and it seems like, just go ahead and give me the Bills plus 3. Now – really, it is starting to feel like fool's gold. Having said that, I'm not betting the Browns until further notice.
They're a train wreck.
I knew it last week. I saw it coming at Denver. Yeah. Oh, Denver's got the back third stringer no one's ever heard of. I'm like, oh, it got up to 4, and I hammered that. I was like, come on. This is just typical. The Browns are going to fall apart. But given the Baker Mayfield thing's become an emergency, I mean, he talked all that smack, and now without backing it up, he's become a nightmare with the PR and the press and everything. And, I'm serious. Until they win a game and people talking about get the coach out of there in 1 year, I mean, I can't back them until they show some improvement.
It's absolute nonsense the Browns are the favorite in this game. It really is. That's why I think it's obvious.
Sometimes the price dictates the winner.
That's what it's got to be. All right. How in the world are the Browns a favorite in this game?
I'm with you guys.
But I'm going to bet them.
But you're going to bet the Browns.
It's so stupid that I'm going to bet them.
Yeah. You're going to be stupid John.
I'm so stupid.
You're going to be stupid John after you bet the stupid Browns. Yeah. Tampa Bay at home playing the Arizona Cardinal. Tampa Bay at home laying 4.5 points. I mean, I look at this game too, and this Arizona team. But Arizona, what's Arizona? Their record right here. I got the record. They're 3-5
right
now. They've been competing. They could give up a lot of points. They've given up 251 points this year.
Buccaneers can score too.
That's like at the top three of most points given up this year in the NFC. Excuse me.
You all right?
I got the hiccups all of a sudden.
Jeez.
In the NFC.
What are you drinking?
I don't know. I mean, you look at this Arizona team. Kyler Murray's he looks like he was going to be a dud, but now he's playing pretty well. I just don't know if I can lay 4.5 with Tampa Bay. This would probably be a pass game, or I'd be looking to tease the Cardinals and getting the game over. 52.5, that is the highest total on the board this week. I kind of like it under.
What was the total?
52.5.
52.5. I know. It's because the Buccaneers can score a little bit.
They can.
Jameis is actually playing pretty good football right now.
At times.
Coming off that bye a couple weeks ago, I'm a believer in Bruce Arians and what he can do with the quarterback. Byron Leftwich running that offense. I like where the Buccaneers are currently at. That being said, to borrow your line, Ken, that being said, the Cardinals are a pretty good team. They had every chance in the world to beat the Niners last week, and they came up a little short. But, yeah, 4.5 seems a little ambitious to me. I'd have the Cardinals or nothing here. But I kind of do like an over, Ken.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And you do keep in mind the storyline of Bruce Arians used to coach the Cardinals, so there's that familiarity. The Bucs should have probably beat the Seahawks last week, outplayed them most of the way. Of course, the Seahawks found a miracle way to send it to overtime, and then they scored.
That's how the Seahawks win.
But
they're 7-2.
Almost every week, exactly. Every week. They're down big early. I mean, Tampa was looking pretty good, so you wonder if they have a bit of a letdown spot. The Cardinals have been pretty good on the road so far, but it's usually when they're getting more points than this. But, yeah, I couldn't lay that many points with the Bucs at this juncture either.
All right. Sometimes you have to have a game to get back on schedule. The Giants traveling to play the Jets. It opened at Giants minus 2.5. It's up to 3. Total opened at 43.5. A full-point move on the over at 44.5. This game's going to be a shootout. Just give me the over. Jets, let's get this game over.
Jets are home dog here?
Yes, sir.
I hate both these teams. I can't get on the right side of either one of these teams. But it'd be the Giants or nothing. I think the Giants are actually out there competing a little bit, regardless of the Jets, how they pulled that Cowboy win out, I'll never understand. But I like the Giants here. I think they're on the uptick. I think a couple years from now they're going to be right back in the thick of that NFC East.
They just can't score and they get in the red zone, Josh.
Well, Saquon's back now, so that's
good. He was back against the Cowboys.
Yeah,
inside the 10, what, 3 or 4 times they had to set up a field goal.
I get it, but, you know.
Yeah, it's a tough one. But, again, it's one of those things, too. The Jets upset the Cowboys. You know, when they were at home, it seems like it's a setup to where if there's a circumstance in which the Jets could play well, this could be it. But you know me, as long as Darnold's behind center, I've never betting on him. I'll go with the Giants also.
They can play San Jose State and you'll be
exactly.
Taking
this
part.
Well, we said this last week, or maybe I did, is I didn't think Darnold was any good in college. I really didn't.
Yeah, he's just a turnover machine. He's
all
got
right.
Every measurable in the book. But
all right, let's head off to our next commercial break on ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, we're back at the Three Mill Racing Sports Book at the Club County. But moving right down this, Saints. At home versus the Falcons, 13.5. Saints are laying totals 51.5. You know, this is the Saints, people would say incredible misfortune the last couple of years in the playoffs. The Falcons, ever since the second half of the Super Bowl, this team has not been the same. But, man alive, you know, there's still a lot of weapons. Julio Jones, Matt Ryan, I believe, is supposed to be back this year. Austin Hooper.
He's back this week. Yeah. You mean Matt Ryan is?
Go ahead.
And it's still that many points? I just didn't know what his status was. I hadn't heard.
Well, they just this would be such a Falcon thing to do, to give them everything
actually
they want
here. Show
up
on this one.
And this division's like that, though. You know, when you get into laying almost two touchdowns, it's almost an automatic take with anyone in that division because they just play each other so well. They match up well because they're all built to beat each other.
And, you know, what's funny is, like, the lines have finally caught up to how bad the Falcons are. We're like, right, they had competitive spreads the first few weeks that just kept getting blown out. This is a spread that finally indicates, okay, we've got one horrible team here. You know, two touchdowns in the NFL, though, is just might as well be like four in college.
It really
is. And, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if suddenly they kind of show up and make it close.
Because, I mean, as good a defense as the Saints have been playing, the Falcons have the ability to score. They've been scoring all year, playing catch-up most of that time.
But number nine team in the NFL as far as yards per game, John.
Yeah, and it's I 13 points here. Saints are clearly 13 points better than the Falcons. But in a division game with so much familiarity, Matt Ryan back. Matt Ryan's he's always going to play well, I believe. I think he's one of the top quarterbacks in this league still. I like the Falcons.
I think Kamara's back too.
There you go.
So, Ravens traveling on the road to play the Bengals, open at 9.5 up to 10. Total a full point move towards the under from 45.5 down to 44.5. John, this is your division. A lot of people really think that they kind of like Cincinnati right here. You know, Baltimore coming off the big win versus the Patriots last week, and this is kind of not a sandwich game, but like a letdown game.
There is a little bit of letdown, I think, that you would have to worry about right now. Lamar Jackson's been sick all week. He has been limited in practice just with some sort of, I don't know if it's a stomach or, you know, a cold or whatever, but he's been limited a little bit. But,
you know,
the Bengals, man.
Well, the Red Rifle's getting benched, right?
That's a great point. For another redhead, what are they doing? They got to match their uniforms? Is that what the Bengals, is this how the Bengals pick out quarterbacks?
So, the Baltimore Ravens average, everybody knows, 204 yards a game rushing. Uh-huh. They're going up against the defense that allows the most yards a game rushing at 177, John.
Yeah.
Do we have 100 yard rushers this game? I think we might. I'm going to say yes.
I hope so. Lamar's my fantasy quarterback. But
well, I wasn't talking about him.
Well, I know that, but it's
I'm joking.
It's a I cannot bet against the Ravens in this situation, even though everything I just said about that, about the Falcons and the Saints being a division matchup, and you add them going on the Ravens going on the road in a letdown situation, that all points to the Bengals for me ordinarily. But I just think it's a different level of football with the Ravens and the Bengals right now. So I'm not going to bet this at all, but if I were to bet it, I would bet the Ravens.
I'm going to bet the Ravens for one reason. If Dalton was playing, I would take Cincinnati all the way. AJ Green might come back this week, so a lot of weapons there. Maybe there is. Maybe they stand up and play for this rookie quarterback a little bit, or this first time starter this year. Maybe they do. Might. I don't know. That's the uncertainty right now.
And Andy Dalton's been nothing but a pro. He's been a good player for them. They've gone to the playoffs a number of times in his career. But at some point, it's time for a change. I don't know who this cat is that's coming in to replace him. I don't know. I know nothing about him. But maybe they do rally around him. Maybe he has earned the right to get this start right now. And I just read Andy Dalton to the Bears next year. Does this team, the Bears never care about upgrading that position?
Apparently
ever?
Not. Packers at home laying at 5.5 to the Carolina Panthers. 47.5 is a total, down to 47. Cam may have probably played, barring injury, his last game for Carolina.
Yeah.
You know, with that being said, we've been saying this forever, John, and you guys always made fun of me, but I think that he was a one-year wonder, and I don't believe in his ability to be a quarterback. I think, and I made the comment earlier in the year.
An NFL MVP talking about.
I do. I think he's a one-year wonder. I really do.
He's had more than 1 year.
Not in my opinion.
Cam Newton's been
Defending him. Anyways, what do you think? Packers at home laying 5.5.
Love the Packers here. The Chargers were one of my top plays last week. I just thought that spot in particular, it wasn't anything more than this is the spot where the Chargers rise up. Packers lay an egg here. I thought it was a perfect spot for the Chargers. Now I think the Packers come back home and they just blister the Panthers here. Kyle Allen's played great, and you know the Panthers are they're just a different animal on the road, and the Packers going back home. I just think this is a time right here for the Packers.
Josh,
yeah, kind of like the over. I actually think we're seeing some pretty good offense here, but with Green Bay, I was hesitant, you know, early on to lay points with them, and this, of course, is just inside a touchdown. It might be a pretty good bounce back stop, but I'm still hesitant to play them as a close to touchdown favorite here. I think Carolina could be a pretty live dog, so I probably pass, just play the over.
Carolina defense. The QBR rating versus the Carolina defense is the fourth lowest in the NFL. So as far as that's concerned, you know that they kind of script for quarterbacks pretty well. With that being said, Josh, I think Carolina's going to give them all they can handle here. I think 5.5 is way too many. Bears at home versus the Lions, laying 2.5, totals 41. I like the Bears. It's going to be one of my plays. Josh and I already talked about playing this game in the contest. It's the one game that we immediately agreed upon. I think that this is a spot. Detroit, you're going into Detroit. You can run against Detroit. It's supposed to be really windy, and I think you're going to get a huge rushing attack from the Chicago Bears. That defense is going to be able to kind of hold Matthew Stafford. What a year he's having, by the way.
He's questionable, and but, you know, he's a little banged up, but he'll play. That dude.
Yeah. But with the wind and against that defense, I think the elements and the situation plays into Chicago's hands, and I think it's just a light line for Chicago at home. Yeah. Give me the Bears minus 2.5. I'm going to throw that one out there.
Yeah, I like the Bears here. Josh, real quick, who would you rather take career, Philip Rivers or Matthew Stafford?
I mean, come on, there's very similar parallels.
That's why I asked.
See their numbers. I mean, I'd say Rivers only because of the longevity at this point. He's outlasted him, he's made more money. Neither one of them's ever won anything. So,
yeah.
Right, career?
Career-wise.
How many kids does...
Not 11 or whatever the hell Philip Rivers has.
I think he has 7, doesn't he?
I think he has 9.
I think it's more, yeah, and more than 7.
Listen, Philip Rivers came of age when Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, and Tom Brady did. So it's not all on him. You know what I mean? All right, I guess you don't.
Hey, Bears-Lions.
Great. Diego, what the hell, man?
We're getting off keel on, aren't we, Diego?
Not really, we're on it. We got to talk about the Bears and Lions. We got to come up with something.
Yeah, we do, John.
The Bears and Lions.
Everybody has to have a winner. There's a winner.
I know that, but we're just trying. All right, go ahead.
Who do you like?
I told you I like the Bears.
Josh?
Same.
We all covered that.
Colts at home versus the Dolphins. 10.5 was the number, up to 11. Total is 44.5, down to 44. Can you play the Colts here, Josh?
I don't know. My question is, could you play Miami? I mean, just because at some point, you go back to the well too often on that. I mean, granted, they got their win and everything, but that's still a bad team. I wouldn't want to fall in love with the points just because it's double figures. I don't know.
But I like that they do compete every week.
I like the fact that all the media is saying, the Dolphins are getting better. The Dolphins, oh boy.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're not that good. But at least they avoided the 0-16 curse.
They did. Now, is Brissett playing or no?
Is Cincinnati going 0-16?
Oh, is Brissett playing in
this
game?
No, you're talking about the 0-16. I don't know. I can't.
I mean, that's kind of an important thing.
Well, the numbers, I'm assuming that the wise guys have bet it from 9.5 to 10. So I'm assuming there's like some knowledge out there that he's probably going to be under.
Yeah, the Colts coming off a rough loss. I'd have nothing but the Colts here. They'll be on a teaser for me.
You know, I like the Colts in this, and John, you're right. I do like the 10-point teaser here. And let's not forget the body of work that Miami's put in up to this last game.
Sure.
Let's take that into consideration.
But you could see a little steady improvement leading up to that.
Okay.
They should have beaten the Redskins. They jumped out on the Steelers. You could see it kind of coming. It's hard to go 0-16. The Bengals are going to do it, I think, but I don't know.
In which case, the Dolphins have at least 2 wins because they play each other.
Oh, do they?
So, yeah.
Nice.
The Dolphins could end up really losing the grip on that high draft pick.
Wow.
Number one. The good news is there's so many quarterbacks coming out. If that's what they want, they'll be fine.
I would take Young from Ohio State.
I like Indy in this game, guys. I do a 10-point teaser in my three-teamer, you know, to get them down just to win the game. Indianapolis is 5-3 right now. They're one game behind the Houston Texans in the AFC South. You know, so they're competing. Everybody kind of rode off the Colts when Luck went down, but Brissett's been in there. T.Y. Hilton, I guess the status, what's him? Because I know he's been banged up. I'm not sure if he's going to be back this week, though, either. Josh, have you heard?
No, I haven't. I mean, actually, the thing is, I think Brissett is listed as probable, and I haven't heard an update on Hilton.
So with that being said, you look at Miami defensively, number 29th ranked team in the 29th ranked team in the NFL. They give up about 150 on the ground. So I think you're going to see a big, big dose of Marlon Mack and what's the other kid's name? Hines. That being said, I think the Colts are going to be able to control the game. And as long as turnovers don't get involved, I think the Colts are going to have a pretty good, pretty easy path right here to actually improve their record and get up to 6-3 right there and stay in pace with the Houston Texans. Real quick, Josh, anything on this? I mean, anything that you any outlet? Nothing that you like other than that?
Like I said, yeah, I would just pass on that one.
All right. Rams traveling to Pittsburgh, John. It was 3.5, up to 4, was 44.5, down to 44. Rams, like I said, laying 4 points right here. You know, the body of work by Pittsburgh, John, you kind of got to be, you know, they're not giving up. He could be coach of the year right now, losing all those players, 4-4, still 2 games behind Baltimore in the North. But, you know, the second place, the Buffalo has 6 wins. Indianapolis has 5. Oakland has 5. So they're still in the hunt. The thing of this playoff thing.
They're still right there. The addition of Micah Fitzpatrick has pretty much turned that whole, not just the defense around, but the whole team around with their ability to play defense and create turnovers and everything like that. Now James Conner is out.
Oh, he is out?
He's officially out.
Oh,
Juju Smith-Schuster is questionable. It looks like a game time decision at this point. So those aren't great. That's not a great development on either way. I was really leaning towards the Steelers before both of those were announced. The Steelers at home, Rams aren't exactly lighting the world on fire right now, and the Steelers are playing Steeler football right now with they're getting after the quarterback and they're creating turnovers. They want to run the ball, but without James Conner, you have Jalen Samuels in there. Trey Edmonds, who had a great game last week, he's out as well. So it's going to be interesting. This is going to be on Mason Rudolph. We're going to learn a lot about Mason Rudolph right now. I can't touch it either way here. I was really leaning towards the Steelers if James Conner was going to play in this game, and especially Juju. So as of right now, I don't want to have a cop out, but I can't pick a side here.
Josh, we got about 30 seconds before we have to go off the traffic.
Yeah, as I said, it's a tough spread because I think the Rams need to get back on track. The Steelers, of course, finally got their heads above water. They've been playing pretty well, so it's right in that key number, 3.5. It makes me wonder if Pittsburgh can keep it up, but that's a solid key number to have in your favor. But I feel like the Rams might be in a pretty good spot there to get the best of them.
And the move has come from the Rams. Like we said, opened at 3.5, and it's up to 4 right now. So make sure you download the William Hill mobile sports app at www.williamhill.us. We'll be back after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM.
All right, welcome back to the William Hill Racing Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Ken Barler had to step away for the rest of the night. There's actually a charity poker event going on here, and he had to get in there and help facilitate the event, which includes dealing poker and supervising the tournament. So he's gone, but we've got everyone's picks. We'll do at the end of the night. Instead of doing them on the show, it seems like the thing we're doing these days is the Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping Facebook page is where we'll get together all the picks of everyone on the show.
I mean, if you really
contributors.
If you really listen on the way, you can tell what we really like and what we don't.
Yeah, exactly. But nonetheless, if we want to do our thing with our 3 official picks, we'll put them on there later, and we can also give leans and selections on various other games, which we'll get into down the line, meaning college and UFC, whatever else we got on our minds. But so before the break, we left off, just going in order here of these games, we left off with Rams Steelers, so we move forward to Cowboys-Vikings, which is the Sunday night game. Cowboys -3, 47.5 is a total. And to me, this is an interesting one because the Cowboys seem to be in kind of the breakout mode. I mean, they had the big win against the Eagles, letdown spot against the Giants. Could have been tough, but they had big second half and blew them out. So I wonder, do they keep it going, or is this where they get held up a little bit by a Vikings team that's also been pretty tough lately? Ken and I were talking, did we play Minnesota on, and despite being a Cowboys fan, he tries not to be a homer when it comes to the betting. We were talking, do we want to play Vikings in our big contest that we're in? And I think that's the play here. It's weird. Sometimes the Cowboys can get on a roll where they'll cover these, but keep in mind, Sunday night, that'll be for sure the public side being Dallas. And I'm starting to warm up to +3 here on Minnesota.
Adam Thielen's out. I think that is a factor in this game. Receivers aren't worth much point spread-wise, but you got to factor it in to
he's the sure-hands guy.
He really is. And, he's more than just he's a playmaker as well. But I kind of like the Cowboys in these primetime situations. Kenny, you mentioned it, he kind of overdoes it with being a Cowboy fan and the other way with it. And last week that he gave out absolutely the Cowboys against the Jets. He was all over it. It panned out for him. And so in this one, he was talking Vikings in this game?
Yeah, we're both kind of starting to lean with the points. Obviously, it's a flat three. If it's a 3.5 of the parlay card, if you could get the extra hook, I think it's probably a 3-point game.
Yeah, give me the Cowboys here. The Vikings are they're an enigmatic team for me. I guess they play really well at home. They have taken advantage of their schedule, I guess you could say, which everybody does. You only play the teams that are in front of you. I like the Cowboys here. I've always thought, even going from the beginning of the season, that the Cowboys are one of the 2-3 most talented teams in this league, and now's the time. We're in November now, Josh. Now's the time to turn it up. If they are truly who they should be, they should beat this Vikings team handily.
All right. Yeah, just we'll see. It's a competitive game. But you're right. I feel like the last couple of years the Cowboys have just gone in streaks, and they could be in the midst of one now where they'll win 4 or 5 games in a row by double figures. So yeah, they could just keep rolling. The offense is obviously
it's a good matchup.
Starting to
it's
click. They're starting
game.
To play
these
pretty
Sunday
well.
Night games, week in and week out for the most part.
Right. No, defensively, they'll have to handle it. How about that? Dalvin Cook and Ezekiel Elliott, probably the two best multi-purpose running backs
I'd
in the league.
So. I'd say so.
It's a great matchup. So on Monday night, you have the lone undefeated team, San Francisco 49ers against the Seattle Seahawks, who, interestingly enough, are 7-2 with both losses coming at home. Could be worse. We're talking about how erratic the Seahawks are. They come back. They get down early. It seems every game they come back. The Ravens got them a couple weeks ago, and the Saints, without Drew Brees, beat them. Both losses in Seattle. Interesting. Yeah. They're undefeated on the road. I was curious what the number would be here. I was a little bit disappointed. I was hoping to get 7 because I think Seattle hangs in there. It's like, yeah, they're not going to be caught sleeping. It's just 6. Because it seems like now, finally, 49ers bandwagon started to load up quite a bit. Felt like they'd be the public side. And said that, Seattle's gotten the best of this matchup the last few years. So 49ers minus 6, total of 46.5 for your Monday night game. And like I said, I mean, who knows? We'll see where the money comes in. I'd like a better deal on Seattle, but I'd only have the underdog.
Yeah, Seahawks, we kind of talked about it a little bit ago. They find a way to win every week. This team could honestly be 4-5 right now with some of the escapes.
If those breaks went against them.
Exactly.
Totally. They seem to be living right for whatever reason. They've gotten a ton of breaks.
They really have. And, the Niners are not going to go undefeated. This is a very good Niner team. I've been accused of being a Niner hater, and you're correct. But I like when the Niners are good. For the area, everybody gets excited. I have a million Niner fan friends, my family, and all that stuff. And I just at some point, this is the NFL. Some point, they're gonna trip up, and they almost did against the Cardinals last week.
Right.
The Steelers had them beat. I mean, that's they're not gonna go undefeated. 6.5. I think this is a close game. I think the Seahawks keep it close. That's the way the Seahawks play. They keep everything close and find a way to win in the end. I'm not saying the Seahawks are going to beat this team, but I think they keep it close.
And that's a good key number, and I agree. Just face it, even if the Niners end up remaining undefeated, you could see any number. I mean, 28-24, that's an underdog cover, and I see it being sort of that one-score game. Of course, the Niners could win by a touchdown, but I like a lot of key numbers in your favor if you take Seattle there, and who knows? I said if it – a lot of steam comes in on the chalk before game time. You could get 6.5, maybe 7. So, all right, so that's your NFL wrap-up there. We've gone through all the games. Again, if you're looking for our favorite picks, go to Kenny B's ESPN handicapping page on Facebook, and we'll put down everyone's top picks there. But that is your NFL slate for the week. We're going to get into some college because it's a big weekend for that. Of course, the huge headliners, LSU and Alabama, both teams undefeated. This is 12:30 on CBS. Alabama opened up as a 6.5-point favorite with a total of about 67. It's interesting how the adjustments have been made on both side and total. The total's down 4. The opener of 67 is down to 63, and Alabama's gone from 6.5 to a flat 6. It seems like it's interesting because I did a write-up for Sportsline.com earlier today on this, the idea that it's not often you hear a lot of sentiment, both in the media and otherwise, going against Alabama. Where this week, it seems like everyone you can find who's analyzing these games is picking LSU. It's not often Alabama doesn't lose on their home turf very often, and it's kind of funny to see them sort of being the no respect side. Well, four times in the last
100 years,
Dick Saban era, and two of them were from Ole Miss.
Okay? Yeah,
and so to me, it's the the dynamics are interesting because you don't hear it that often where, you know, you turn on the TV and there's people analyzing it. Everyone's all over LSU. Because of that, I like the other side. I'm like, Nick Saban's smart enough to use this. We're like, hey, how many national championships have they won this decade? They've been in every single version of the college football playoff. And now suddenly everyone's saying, yeah, but LSU's got your number. I'm not so sure. On a neutral field, maybe different, but this is, you know, at a home for Alabama. And I don't know. I mean, Alabama inside of a touchdown. And granted, LSU's impressive. It's great that they finally got the offense going there. Quarterback right now, Joe Burrow, is the number one odds-on Heisman candidate. But and it's interesting, too, how the flip. And you might flip the script after this one because this will be a huge Heisman determination game because – if someone plays poorly or whatever, they're going to fall down. But Tua Tagovailoa, it's interesting. Last year, remember, he fell out of the Heisman race because he played poorly against Georgia, uh-huh. then got hurt, and that pretty much wrapped it up for Kyler Murray because he played well. It was on the same as Championship Saturday. Sure. Kyler Murray played great, and Tua kind of had a disappointing game. This one, it was crazy. You know, he's missed a couple weeks with an ankle injury, too. But, John, can you believe the guy's actually going out there just a couple weeks after having surgery? No matter how minor the surgery might have been, that seems crazy. You're going to play in a Division I college football game after, you know, having that big of a medical procedure just a couple weeks back. But they're saying he's all right. And like I said, for this given situation, I think it could go over. I think it probably will be a shootout. Neither team's playing much defense this year, but give me the Tide.
How about that? When you think of LSU Alabama this decade and
hey,
all these
2011,
teams,
9-6.
Yeah. 9-6, 20 to nothing.
9-6 in overtime.
Wasn't 20 to nothing the national championship?
I think it was like 23-0, but yeah.
Yeah, whichever. Yeah, it's
that same year, right? Alabama got their revenge.
LSU went from that's their identity to hiring Joe Brady to run this offense and making this an exciting brand of football, which LSU, we haven't seen that at LSU. You just haven't. Which is always it always amazed me that teams like Alabama and LSU, Florida State, Miami, Florida, over the last decade or so, haven't had these dynamic quarterbacks for the most part, with the exception, you know, Jameis Winston and you know, recently Jalen Hurts and Tua. And it's just, it's going to be really something to see if this is a shootout between LSU and Alabama, because that's not something we're used to. College football, we study it, we live it, we love every part of it. 41-38. LSU-Alabama game? Could you imagine?
That could be crazy. And could LSU be hung in there last year, but it was. It was just standard with their defense. Alabama pulled away. And I say good for Ed Orgeron because I wasn't sure he was the right hire. I still think, you know, Les Miles got a bit of a raw deal there. But they brought him in. I'm like, is Orgeron really going to do much? But here's where I think a couple quotes I heard from him made a lot of sense. And maybe, of course, when he got hired at Ole Miss, you know, that was forever ago. He was from the USC coaching tree. He was young. He's obviously gained wisdom and, you know, experience. Coming back, he's more prepared. And what I heard from him, and you mentioned, you know, the way they're opening up the offense, you've never seen that from LSU. But a couple interviews earlier this year, he said, you know what I realized? He goes, at LSU, not only, you know, the 10 year before he came on board and what he actually did his first couple years, he goes, on offense, we used to play not to lose. He goes, let's face it. He goes, we have good running backs. Just a power run game. It was just like we trusted our defense, but on offense, we just said, quarterback management game, let's just not lose on offense. And no wonder. Yeah, they actually would end up usually getting knocked out with a couple, because a couple of those tight games wouldn't go their way. He's like, finally decided to get with the times and actually be a threat on offense. And look what happened. You know, it was funny. It struck me in hindsight. I didn't know how good they were second week against Texas. I took Texas with 6.5 points. They go, what a great home underdog spot that was. It's crazy. It was only 7 points. Yeah. LSU more or less blew them away.
They did.
Texas has their own offense, and they scored a, you know, backdoor touchdown to make the final margin. But most of the game, I'm sitting there, Texas can't even get a singular stop when they had a chance to, you know, stop and score, tie the game. I was like, whoa, I wonder if that is aberration of Texas that bad on defense or what.
Yeah.
But then suddenly the preceding weeks, no, LSU's doing that to everybody.
Yeah,
and so I understand. I think I understand why the LSU sentiment's there. But to me, ultimately, it's just like, yeah, you're still going to take Orgeron over Saban at this spot.
Well, of course. You know, Ed Orgeron, is he was born to be the LSU head coach in good times and bad. He's just, he's a Bayou boy. And you're right. If you go Saban versus Orgeron and everything like that, but the Alabama Crimson Tide at home against a team like this that has absolutely nothing to lose. The loser of this game is not necessarily disqualified from competing for a national championship. We've seen that. We know that. Now, LSU just go down there, go to Tuscaloosa, let it all hang out. That's why I like LSU a little bit here, just because yeah, all these kids, they all feel the same pressure. They all compete. They all do everything like that. LSU has zero to lose here. You lose to Alabama in Tuscaloosa, guess what? That's what you're supposed to do. You beat Alabama and LSU, you're a legend. Here we go. I like LSU here. I'm hoping that people bet the other side so I can get that over that seven. But I don't know if that's going to happen.
Seems like it's going the other way.
So yeah, exactly.
Alabama spread's going south.
I know
it.
Can you imagine that?
That's why I had to take them. I couldn't. Maybe I'm jumping in on the sucker side.
And the principalities of having Alabama under a touchdown at home, I understand that part of it too. It's just the college football fan in me, which I gotta gambling wise is not a good place to be. I think the LSU, I think they just let it all hang out right now. They've never brought a team like this with the ability to score. So we'll see. Maybe Alabama shuts them down. This is Nick Saban. Nick Saban revels in situations like this.
Well, I also wonder, Jonathan, could it be a shootout similar to what we saw in the national championship game where them and Clemson from the start were just running up and down the field? And if so, yeah, who gets the best of that? Because
it keeps running through my mind.
Yeah, just think the same way. As much as a quick strike offense as LSU has presented this year, Alabama is the same way. Those Jerry Judy, those quick slants that turn into 80-yard touchdowns. It wouldn't surprise me if we suddenly we saw that kind of thing and it was 28 all at halftime. It was unheard of for this rivalry.
I cannot wait. This is what college football is all about.
So, again, the big game tomorrow. LSU and Alabama, 12:30 kick on CBS, and right now we mentioned the opening numbers, but it's gone from about 6.5 and 67. This last I checked was 6 flat and 63 on the total.
63.
Check out the big game.
That's quite a loss right there. It's, man, I don't know.
Yeah, they keep dropping. I'm telling you, one thing I'm not real big on is the under at all. Yeah.
I was going to say
they're going to step up and play some defense against each other, but I'm still not buying it.
Yeah, that's one thing that Scott Van Pelt, Monday Night Bad Beat segment has taught me. Don't bet college unders if you can help it.
For the most part.
The best part about it is when you see games go to overtime, so they don't call it undertime.
All right, we're going to go after our last commercial break. Be back for one final segment here, so join us again in just a few minutes. William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the last segment. This week's William Hill Racing Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. Again, Josh Diggle, John Stevens with you the rest of the way. Ken Barlow had to go deal some poker for a charity tournament, but we'll be hearing from him. And he
Scorpions Baseball Academy.
He'll weigh in with his picks for sure on the Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping page. So if you actually follow our picks and want to check all that out, probably later tonight and or tomorrow, we'll give picks for the NFL, college football, whatever else is going on. So we talked a little bit before the break about the big Alabama-LSU game. There's a few others that are huge tomorrow. John, there's one other SEC game. I actually think it's a little bit off the radar because it's not Alabama-LSU. That's Georgia-Missouri. It's interesting. Missouri's fallen off. They've been beat a couple times. It's funny. Missouri has lost to Wyoming and Vandy. They're 5-2.
Wow.
Otherwise, they'd be in the thick of the SEC East race, but they're not. But Georgia, it's funny, right? They had the upset loss to South Carolina, but I was of the belief watching them, like, hold on a second. Yeah, this is terrible for their title chances and all that, but I'm like, I feel like they're going to bounce back and just kind of wait for it. So I had them last week against Florida, and this is what's interesting to me is this, because it crossed a key number. This opened 17.5, Georgia. It's now down to 16.5, which shows you there's quite a bit of emphasis or there's been some action behind Missouri so far, and I think Georgia just crushes them. Missouri soft, finesse team. I mean, Georgia I still think is in that mode where they need to make that run and do it impressively so. I mean, now they're in control. I mean, they'll probably get to the SEC title game after they beat Florida. It would take all kinds of crazy stuff to happen for them that. So it means they're probably getting the shot at Alabama or LSU. I think Georgia's right there. So real perplexing loss to South Carolina, but pretty much almost everybody gets a loss these days. I just feel like they're going to roll again.
So UNLV beat Vandy handily in Nashville. And they beat Georgia, beat Florida. So UNLV is better than Florida and Georgia, is what you're telling
me. Exactly, by association. The old transitive rule of college football.
Exactly.
It always applies.
It always applies.
But anyhow, to me,
I'm with you.
It's kind of a sleeper. I think Georgia crushes.
I do too. Georgia always has these hiccups during the season, it seems. They can't ever get to that elite level with the LSUs and Alabamas and Auburns and Floridas and
right on the doorstep.
Always right there.
Oh, and they should have won the national championship 2 years
absolutely
ago.
Absolutely should have.
Completely collapsed.
Absolutely should have. But it's
Tua the credit.
Yeah, this game in particular, it's Georgia or nothing.
Now let's go to another one, just because it features 2-1 beatings.
Yeah.
It's early
How about
in the morning.
That?
Big Ten, Minnesota, who I knew would be good this year, but it's funny. You know what? They struggled. I think they were taking the overtime a couple times. I thought Minnesota would be good out of the gate. They weren't. They've been completely I mean, progressing, though, as the season goes along, because lately they've been crushing teams, finally covering some spreads here. Penn State, it's kind of interesting, right, because with Trace McSorley gone, I thought they were and the guy playing for the Eagles, Miles Sanders. Penn State looked to be completely rebuilding. They're undefeated as well. So I'm like, what's going on here? Because teams that seem to have pretty big, you know, roster overhaul, and they're still just chugging right along, especially the Nittany Lions here. Minnesota was expected to be good. They had a ton of guys back. But nonetheless, this late in the season, 2-1 beatings. Penn State opened up -7, total of 48. This is an early game, so if you're interested in a, you know, big game between the undefeated Big Ten teams, this is 9 a.m. kickoff, probably the biggest game of the morning slate. And you got Penn State was 7. It's home underdogs getting the love here. So it's now 6.5, total of 47.5. And it's interesting because I would love to take Minnesota in this spot.
I don't know, man.
But you know, they've got that powerful rushing game, and they actually have a strong home field advantage. And, oh, here's another thing. I don't know what the weather would be like, but you know, Minnesota is great when it's freezing.
Yeah.
They put, not the Penn State, you know, not accustomed to bad weather. Right.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, especially when it's bitter cold, the Gophers tend to play pretty well there. I understand the sentiment of taking the home dog there, and yet, yeah, Penn State, I mean, they crushed Michigan State. They've proved they can play on the road as well. You know, it's almost – I want the full 7 for Minnesota, but when, obviously somebody's going down here, and I kind of lean with Penn State.
Yeah, P.J. Flex had a great job there, leaving Central Michigan to go to Minnesota, and he just signed an extension.
Florida State rumors,
USC rumors.
Of course, the huge extension
and
for him.
I got to give props to Pat Forty, the great college football writer.
Who
he just went to Sports Illustrated in the last couple of weeks as well. He called for Minnesota to be undefeated going into November just because of their schedule.
Yeah, they had a pretty weak schedule and a lot of good things coming back.
Yeah.
Who they realized quarterback, Rodney Smith's been there like 10 years, the running back who had a medical redshirt last year. They were just solid all the way around.
Yeah.
And they peaked toward the end of last year.
Absolutely. So when you combine those factors with the schedule, getting to this point, he called them to be undefeated, and sure enough, here they are. Now, Penn State's a different animal. This team is something else. This team is a legitimate national championship contender, I believe.
High turnover, too. Again, I expected something of a step back just because they lost so many players.
James Franklin's doing a great job there.
It's crazy. Another guy who Florida State would probably like to get in the mix.
Just hire Deion Sanders.
I don't know, man. We can talk about that. Here's what's funny, though. First game without Willie Taggart, talk about going from the hottest candidate in the country to rock bottom in a couple-year span. I mean, Taggart was doing his thing at South Florida. Oregon decided, all right, we fire Mark Helfrich. It seemed like a decent hire. Taggart is known for growing these programs, and maybe Oregon was struggling. So he goes there, and to be clear, they weren't great. He has Justin Herbert, all right? They weren't great, but they weren't bad. They were 7-5 last year or 2 years ago. His 1 year at Oregon, you're like, all right, but it looks like he had some building blocks. Doesn't stay. Jumps ship for what he says is his dream job, that being Florida State. You know, he's from the area, going back there. And there's just no doubt about it. Florida State was, more or less from day one under his regime, a complete disaster. It only got worse. It's not so much the results on the field, although, of course, losing to Miami in real, you know, disappointing fashion last week. Here sealed the deal for him. They were going to fire him anyway. But it wasn't just the performance on the field, which was bad. But it was every other thing. All kinds of guys getting in trouble and off the field. But on the field, personal foul penalties at every turn, so it looked completely undisciplined.
This guy went
from he was the hot guy, Taggart, to, you know, where's his next job going to be? I mean, they it's obviously a very severe situation where they don't even wait to the season to get rid of the guy.
And there's a theory about 21 games after a coaching change in college football where you can see you give them 21 games and you can see if there's market improvement or you're stagnant or you're regressing. He didn't get the 21 games. I'm not a proponent. I follow Florida State. I would say I'm a Florida State fan, but I do root for Florida State, always have. And it's interesting that you get to this point and you just pull the plug out right there. There's a lot of pressure in that job now. Bob Stoops was getting mentioned for it, and I didn't want anything to do with that. I would like the other Norvell from Memphis.
He didn't want anything to do with it. He's going to use you as a reference or something. He didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, he called me.
John, like, John, man, can I go, put you down as a reference?
No, and I said, listen, you have a great job with the XFL, with the Dallas program. Stick with that. That's where you belong.
Surprised you turned him down, though.
I did. That's what I'm saying. But it's
Jimbo Fisher. I mean, he hung out for about a decade, but
and cashed in A&M, and they are nothing.
Totally.
And it's
he was overrated anyway.
It's an interesting job. I say the Deion Sanders thing kind of tongue-in-cheek. But,
no, but it's funny though. We'll talk about it for a second. But you know what's crazy?
Why is he so dismissed though? Who knows football more than he does?
You know what's funny? I think he's dismissed just because of the perception of him as a player, the all-flash guy. That's not who he is as a teammate. People don't realize that though. And here's what's funny.
There's prime time and there's Dion.
Right. And you realize with what some programs have done in any realm. I mean, Michigan just hired Juwan Howard. But let's face it, though, but he has years of experience. I mean, he's coaching all over the place. He's known as that. But still, hired a Fab Five guy.
He was the stabilizing force as a freshman.
Yeah, exactly.
Juwan Howard was.
He was always the most mature guy out of that whole group, for sure. And so it's just one of those things, though. It wouldn't be the craziest, but it's one of those things. If it doesn't work, it's going to set your program back drastically. But I guess what I'm saying is we even talked about baseball a couple of weeks ago and things like that. We're like, hey, you know what? There's these guys where they say, oh, so-and-so's the manager of whatever team. And I thought he was still playing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there are guys were like, whoa, I didn't even realize they were out of the game as a player. They're being hired as managers. You're saying, but that's baseball's trend. Like, maybe they can relate more to it. So I guess what I'm saying is it wouldn't be that surprised. Dion seems – and you're right. I think people are just roll their eyes just because he was –
Dion Sanders recruit
because
absolutely
of what his era was at Florida State. But it's like, well, hey, Willie Taggart didn't work out. I mean,
but I'll tell you what, right now, as a dude that's followed Florida State since the 80s, that dude is Florida State. He is Florida State. You look at Miami, there's 100 different guys you could say, yeah. There's one guy, and it's not Charlie Ward, and it's not Jameis Winston. It's probably Bobby Bowden, but I mean, as a player, it is Deion Sanders.
That was the other thought they say. Bobby Bowden, bring him back, almost like, you know,
K-State.
Yeah, he's like 90 years old already.
Good
like Bill night. Snyder with K-State.
Yeah,
basically
exactly.
Had to force him to,
I mean,
to get
I mean, I'll
of
take
there.
Chris Hall back here, but that's
but,
a different story.
Yeah, so it's interesting. And like you said, all the big names are pretty much up. So it might be probably second grade, like Memphis, Mike Norvell. It's going to be a second grade, but, you know, a group of five coach.
Yeah, Joe Brady.
Exactly.
You never know, but just – I just like the kind of outside-of-the-box thinking. It's so dismissed right away, I don't understand that.
All right, well, that wraps up this week's William Hill Sports Show. Again, get our picks on Kenny B's ESPN Handicapping Facebook page, where we'll jump in with everything there. And there is a good UFC card. Greg Hardy in the main co-main event of the UFC card that's in Russia, so the main card is at noon our time. So check that out if you like, and we may give some UFC picks up there again. So please join us again next week, William Hill Racing Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM.